Sairam, dear listeners, welcome back to our continuing series on Dharma presented by Professor G. Venkatraman. Last week we presented the fifth Q&A in this new series, and today also we'll be continuing with yet another Q&A session based on Professor's earlier talks in this series. The questions, as always, will be posed by a panel, and the panelists are Radio Sai's Bishop Rushti and Sri Aman Javeri, a research scholar from the Department of Management Studies at the Institute. As always, Professor G. Venkatraman will be answering and clarifying the questions put up by the panelists. So, over to Professor for his opening remarks and taking it further.
Hey, you got it wrong. Those fellows should be asking me questions. If you give me the chance, I'll give another talk.
Okay, so we've discussed a few questions based on the talks that you have given. But one thing that I noticed, which is not mentioned in your talks, but I found something interesting which Gurcharan Das had mentioned in this first chapter of his book, The Difficulty of Being Good, and we are dealing with Duryodhana's envy, the first chapter. He refers to envy and health. And he says, and he quotes Mahabharata here, the man who envies other people for their conduct, beauty, courage, family lineage, happiness, success and favor has an eternal sickness. And he says to prove that point, Duryodhana does physically grow sick after witnessing the enormous success of his cousins and all that. And so he refers to how envy can be a health hazard. I felt that that is something interesting which, you know, people do not know that many times a lot of their illnesses is not because of anything else other than their own mental aberrations, and which Swami always referred to as 99% of your diseases are caused by the mind.
See, this is a point that modernity has driven away out of our minds. In Ayurvedic medicine, for example, the medicine part is only a small part of Ayurveda. Most of it was related to being healthy. Second is the mind-body connection.
Yes.
That was dismissed as nonsense by Western medicine.
Correct.
And they treated it, the body chemistry, as just test tube chemistry. But more recently, very detailed studies have shown that there is a definite and fundamental difference between positive thinking and negative thinking. In the sense that based on positive thinking, thinking originates in the brain. We would call it mind, which is, but physically it is in the brain. And chemicals, etc., are produced in the body depending on the instructions that come from the brain. So if you do positive thinking, you get certain kind of chemicals produced, enzymes, etc. And they are beneficial.
Yes.
If you do negative thinking, it produces another set of chemicals which are detrimental to the health of the body. And of course, Swami has been saying all these things. And apart from this, I want to quote one incident.
Yes.
It happened in March of 1999 when Swami went to Delhi and Bombay. In Bombay, he gave a discourse in Cooperage.
Yes.
Supposed to be a public reception. Lot of public personalities, they welcome Swami. Welcome us, Swami, please save us, this place is unlivable and all that. The last speaker was a doctor and also the president of the Bombay Rotary Club. So he came with bow tie, black suit and all that.
Not Dr. K.K. Mistry?
No. Okay. He's some other. Okay. K.K. Mistry is our sailor.
Yes.
He was a man different. He spoke about positive thinking. And he said there was a suburban train accident and two fellows were brought to my hospital. Both were sitting side by side. Both were of the same age. Both had very similar injuries. One fellow kept on saying, I'm going to die. The other fellow said, no, I'm not going to die. I have to live. I have to live. And the doctor said, the fellow said, I'm going to die, died. The fellow said, I want to live, lived.
Wow.
So that was a passing reference to the mind-body interaction. And today, science, Western science is now accepting this. And one more point, Dr. Jeevanandam whom you know, he's from Chicago, he's the eminent heart transplant expert, was done, I think, transplanted more hearts than Sachin Tendulkar has scored runs. he's running out of hearts because the hearts have become unusable, hardened. He told me that he used to be American in attitude, making money, this, that. He didn't care for patients. He would call them by their disease or code number, computer number, and he was very brusque. Mm. And Swami told you, slow down and be kind to patients. So he said, I took it seriously. I would talk to them at length before the surgery and also after the surgery, and I began to smile. He said the post-operative recovery rate increased very fast, I mean increased to a very high level. Wow. He could discharge the patients much earlier than before. This is empirical evidence. So it is no surprise. The body is the same as in those days. Yes. If today it can affect the negative thinking can affect the body, it must have affected him also. There is no surprise. Yeah. It would be surprising if Duryodhana's BP, etc. remained normal.
In fact, as you are mentioning this, I just reminded of once I had gone to the orthopedic department in the hospital. Dr. Kailash Rao was the head of the department then. And there was this poor boy from West Bengal who had a problem with the heart. He was 7 or 8 years old when he had come here. And when we went to the cardiac session, they said it is a small thing which can be corrected. Mm-hmm. But when the surgeons were seeing that boy, then they noticed that his leg is actually turned. His feet is actually turned. And but the parents didn't bother about it. They had come for the heart ailment, and at that time, Dr. Neelam Desai and others told him that, you know, we have an orthopedic, why don't you go there, and you know, you can get that also corrected. So that is when the parents went and, you know, met Dr. Kailash Rao, Dr. Vasuki and others. And then it was because of a small infection that had happened when the boy was 3 or 4 years old, and the parents did not bother because they didn't have resources. You know, the boy was alive, that was enough for them. Now they came because that boy was not able to run, not able to eat, and not do stuff because the heart had failed. So basically when Dr. Kailash Rao saw, so he said he can correct, because Dr. Kailash Rao has learnt one technique called Elisarov technique from Russia, wherein, you know, he takes a long time, but he can correct all these aberrations. And so they started on that, and they told him that you have to stay here for like 4 or 5 months, because every day, by centimeter, he changes the... he tightens the screws, and that's how it happens. But the fantastic thing is, of course, the parents went back and, you know, they had to do, sell something, etc. to stay here for like 3-4 months. But what would have taken 6 months, this boy recovered in 3 months. Mm. And when I went to do that story, Dr. Kailash Rao and Dr. Vasuki, both of them said, we have done nothing for this boy. This boy has healed himself. In fact, when I went, this boy was so friendly. He just came and, you know, hugged me as if he knows me for 100 years. And even as I was talking to the doctors, he simply quietly went and sat on the lap of the doctor. I mean, he just, so nonchalant. And everybody said, every nurse wanted to talk to this boy. Every doctor wanted to spend time with this boy. Every sadhu wanted to serve him because he was always smiling. And he's deaf and dumb. He cannot speak. But if you look at him, you will not know that he has this many conditions. The doctor said, you know, with this spirit, maybe tomorrow he will talk, because he is so much full of spirit.
No, this is true. And now, of course, even Western medicine accepts that stress can enhance your blood pressure and things like that. This is taken for granted.
Yes.
And so I think body-mind connection is strongly present was appreciated by the Chinese and the Indians thousands of years ago.
Correct.
And this is Western medicine, sort of synthetic.
Correct.
Started with organs, repairing organs. Mm-hmm. The whole view, the overall view was always our philosophy. Everything you look at overall.
Yes.
You look at the universe as one entity, the human being as one entity, society as one entity. That is synthetic, and then putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they are beginning to learn that this can... The mind-body connection exists.
Yes.
And there are lots of things related.
Yes.
In fact, since you are mentioning this, you may not be aware that change in environment has affected behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because if you take lead, Yes. In America, they have tried to get rid of lead in public use because of lead poisoning. And lead poisoning creates, it gets settled into the brain and then creates new temperaments. Uh-huh. You become ferocious and people commit murders. Uh-huh. They are not responsible for it, but environment changes. And they use lead in petrol. They removed it, unleaded petrol. They use lead in paint that they have got rid of. They used to put lead in glass for certain reasons, and that lead used to leach out and get into the drinks. So if you drink wine, you get leaded wine.
Oh,
and toys. They kicked the Chinese badly because all their toys had lead in them, the paint. And that is very dangerous. Our paints that we use for Ganesha all contain lead. Lead is used extensively in paint, which is a hazardous thing. And in fact, because of that, the Ganesha will take a long time to dissolve because it's baked.
Oh,
the original people made it out of rock clay, and then it was immersed so that it will get back to where it is.
Yes.
We have modernized all that and shooting ourselves in the foot.
Making Ganesha unhappy by polluting the environment.
Ganesha couldn't care less. We are stupid. So, yesterday I was listening to what you call premature aging in girls and all that.
Mm.
That is connected with food. In the food there is pesticide which is coming from somewhere. So we are living in an world where there are chemicals which God did not create. And we have created for our progress or whatever it is, and now we are paying for it. And very often we do not even know that is happening.
Mm.
So this business of creation and not disturbing was understood intuitively by our people, and they always tried to organize their activity so that nothing was harmed.
Yes.
See, that is what I meant by overall thinking.
Yes. So I think just, if not for anything, at least to be healthy, we should not have envy.
No, in fact, I was mentioning to Bishu about this famous author, Louise Hay. She has written a book, How to Heal Yourself, which is one of the biggest sellers, 39-40 million copies sold. And she talks exactly about this. And of course, this has several references in our scriptures also.
So yes.
Thanks for bringing this point out.
Yeah, Aman, go ahead with your question. Let me not steal all the time.
So, sir, as we are going through this first chapter and reflecting on your talk also, there's this one statement that the author makes, Gurcharan Das, in the first chapter, Duryodhana's Envy. He says, in a well-ordered society, one cannot merely dismiss envy as a human frailty. One ought to design institutions that help to diminish it. And later on, he also makes a reference to societies which create such social arrangements where people feel kind of safe. Sir, what are these institutions and how can a society go about creating such institutions?
It all depends on your value system. If I believe humanness of human beings and citizens is important, then I'll create an appropriate value system. Just to make it current. If you look at the newspapers, there is assault on women, girls, all sorts of things. This did not exist some time ago. Empirically, we had a different value system. Empirically, the value system has diminished and has opened new doors. So clearly, there is empirical evidence that this society has degenerated. Some people say this is not degeneration, this is modernization. We don't have institutions to cope up with modernization. Now, I don't understand this. You want to enjoy something, and you say everybody should pay the price so that we can enjoy that. It is boiling down to that. My morals are my business. If everybody says that, and it creates a societal problem, ultimately police has to get involved.
Yes.
So many other people have to get involved.
Everybody says I.
How can the society pay for all that? Just because some people say I'll do what I want. So, you are trying to have the cake and eat it too. That's the long and short of it. If you do certain things will happen. That's what physics says.
Yes.
There is a cause, there is an effect. You can say, I will have the cause, but the effect should not be there. I think it is illogical.
But sir, nevertheless, the question of developing institutions is still open, no sir? Meaning, we live in a society where there are several things that we can't change. But then at least if there is
what
a...
Give me an example of what you can't change.
Sir, for example, the education system in which children in cities are bred up, the kind of surroundings, the places where they go. For example, how much can you isolate your own child from something like an internet? How long can parents, keep their children away from mobile phones?
No, but then you have allowed that technology to grow. Are you at least now trying to put a break? For example, there are people, I think his name is Chandran Nair. He has written a book called Consumptionomics. I had a copy,
sir.
I don't know where it went. Basically, he said, forget all spirituality, everything. India and China cannot afford to have the standard of living of America.
Yes.
This world does not have enough raw materials for that. Now, you rubbish it and you try to do it.
Yes.
Then what happens is, you are essentially robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of thing. And there will be an imbalance and instability in society.
Yes.
If you build a building where all the load is taken by one few structural entities, the building is going to collapse. That is what common sense tells you. If you see nature, there is a limit to growth.
Yes.
You may not be aware that even when it comes to stars, star is basically a big gas globule. Long ago, Eddington did calculations. He said he took gas globules whose mass increased in powers of 10. That is 10 grams, 100 grams.
Yes.
Like that, he went to 10 to the power of 20 grams, 10 to the power of 30 grams, 40 grams. Those are huge numbers, huh? Many times the masses of the sun. And then he calculated what happens to that gas globule. If it was below a certain size, it will dissipate away like a gas cloud. If it was above a certain size, it will explode. If it was in a certain range, there are two forces, which is like husband and wife. They were fighting, but they stayed together. So this was one of the... So beyond a certain size, you cannot have a star. Below a certain size, you cannot have a star. That's nature. If you look at a tree, it grows up to a certain height. And then one of the famous physicists used to ask school children, why don't we have mountains taller than Everest? There are physical reasons. So nature says there is a limit to growth. And why doesn't that simple elementary thing get into the heads of all these Harvard and the Princeton PhDs? Because they are blinded by false dogma. Anybody can be blinded. We all have our weak spots.
No, people will say
so basically, we have sort of fed ourselves some myths. And we want to live by those myths.
I think people see it, but they don't want to accept it. Because it's not convenient for them.
Because they get a benefit out of it. You see, a billionaire obviously will ask for market-friendly philosophies because he wants 2 billion, 3 billion, 4 million. It is not the money anymore. It is the power I hold, my ability to control so many people. I say, do this, politicians will shudder, shake in their pants and do it. That feeling of power has no limit. There's no limit. See, I can only eat so much. I can only drink so much. I can only sleep so much. I can only see so many movies. Beyond that, I'll get fed up. But this power, the mind can become limitless. The mind's avarice can become limitless. That is why Swami stressed a lot, gave a lot of importance to mind and sense control.
Yes.
Why don't we talk about that? Because it's inconvenient.
Yes.
Give me some other option.
Exactly. Right. I remember in one conversation, Swami says that modernization is not increase in consumption. Modernization, true modernization is limitation, Swami says. That is what is modernization. But, how many modern people will accept that?
Practical level, consumption is going on. That's why he said ceiling on desires. See, modernization is trending to grow your desires.
Yes.
And it has practical implications in terms of disturbing the environment, disturbing the peace of society, and disturbing your health, everything.
Yes. In fact, as I was reading this book,
In one place, you know, when he's talking about these institutions and all that, dealing with envy, Gurcharan Das makes a statement which I feel in some ways touches on spirituality, though he doesn't use that word and, you know, he doesn't really bring that out so obviously. He says that plurality, he quotes someone called Rawls, John Rawls.
Yeah, he's a famous economist.
And he says, plurality of voluntary associations, like churches, clubs, unions and other groupings, in a well-ordered society, each with its own secure internal life, tends to reduce the visibility or at least the painful visibility of variations in men's prospects. I mean, there's one way he says we can deal with envy is if you have all these institutions which help people to think about their inner life, probably there'll be more order in society because they will not perceive these differences too much in a negative light.
It's not so much a question of inner life. Inner life most of us are not capable of. Mm. But what I would call a common sense appreciation of larger good. Ah. It was there in earlier times in every society. Mm. I will give you an example from American society. I heard a fellow say, he had lived through the transition from controlled capitalism, which existed till 1970, to market capitalism, which sort of took off like a rocket after 1975 or so.
Milton Friedman comes.
No, Milton Friedman was lobbying from 1950. Yes. They started schools of think tanks and other things. They laid the foundations. It didn't happen. But then, at some point, sociological factors appeared, which triggered this change. Basically, what was happening was growth rate was slow. Mm. And the wages began to stagnate. Meanwhile, what happened was China came on the scene and they took away the jobs. A lot of people were unemployed. Jobs had to be created. And a lot of young people had come with what you call a high-grade education. They were bursting to innovate and all that. Yes. So there was a cramped atmosphere. We felt it in India. We are saturated. Yes. Some out-of-the-box thinking was needed. That box had been prepared, and the box had been filled by Milton Friedman for 30 years, 30 years earlier. So now they opened it, and everybody said, great, great, great. Yes. But then they began to say, you know, when you take alcohol, it looks great. But after a while, oh, my God, I didn't know I was going to get into this trouble. Those troubles started coming. Now, what I'm trying to say is this man said, basically, this market liberalization led to people buying without having cash in their pocket.
Yes.
You borrowed, and credit card made it very simple. People used to think, I have already paid, I don't have to pay anything. They didn't know that the devil was hiding behind. So he said, when my father was working, you know, in a factory like Ford or whatever it is, every month he would bring the pay packet and put it on the kitchen table. My mother would divide it into three parts, equal parts. One she's put away for our future. One she keeps for the family expenditure. This we will give to the church.
Wow.
So the church acted as a social institution derived from Christ's teachings that you must help others. Must help. You must see everyone as your brother. Everybody must look others as my brother, and I must be my brother's keeper.
Yes.
That is what they said. And at that time, sort of right-wing extremist, a lady called Ayn Rand, she wrote a lot of books, and she said, I am my keeper. My brother can take care of himself. And she propagated that philosophy, which was alien to people at that time. But once this opened the door, market economy came into existence, it thrives on selfishness. The same society which said, I'll give church, now said, what about me? The church can go to millionaires and billionaires. I'm a poor man. I'll keep my share. In Indian society, we had the habit of feeding others, Atithi Devo Bhava.
Yes.
Like that, we had a lot of what you call traditions. In summer, for example, in South India, the rich people will put pandals made of coconut or dry coconut leaves so that you can walk in the shade. Mm-hmm. And one of the big institutions was giving water. They'll put a pot of water with sand and sprinkle. So it'll be like a little chill. and passers by will get this thing. Another thing which is very interesting, especially on the village side, you will see two pillars and a horizontal pillar. It will be at this height. You know what that is for? They used to carry head loads, and they can just take it and put there and take some rest. It will look like pies. Three, two pillars like this and pillars. Villagers used to walk with head loads from one village. On the way, some man would have placed this, you know, to take it and put it down and then put it back. It's very difficult. So at the head level, you can just transfer the load there and then later on put it back. So there was a concern for society in village life. Everywhere in all over the world it was there. If there is some death, everybody will go there. If there is a marriage, they go there. This is what Edmund Burke referred to as communitarianism. Communal gathering, communitarianism. In fact, if you look at the history of society, there was aggregation, which is this kind of coming together. There was also segregation, which is separating. So the forces of history would push one way, this way. Society was buffeted, going back and forth. And now there is what is called individuation and
individualization.
Then there is a word which are autonomous. I have become autonomous. I don't need anybody. I don't care. That is very high in young people. I'll just make one statement. Some years ago, I happened to read a blog. I don't read those things, but somehow it was I call him young Indian blogger. Some fellow from IT sector. He said, I don't care for anybody. I'm on my own. I've got a job. In fact, I took that job away from some American. He is now suffering and I'm enjoying. I don't need anybody. I'm okay. One truck comes and hits him and his brain is damaged. Where is the medical insurance? He's dependent on so many fellows. Supposing, say, he's paralyzed below the waist. He's dependent on two people to take him to the bathroom. So this is nonsense saying I'm independent, I'm autonomous. So the value systems have changed. And there was a time when people wanted to contribute to the church and all that. Now, church building may be there. But if people stay away from the church, what is the use? It's happening all over Europe.
Actually, I remember when Sir used to take awareness class for us. And I think Sir will talk about this later, but since it is important. Sir used to mention to us about this concept of right versus responsibility.
Absolutely.
And Sir always used to say, you know, everybody says this is my right, this is my right. But then for you to have your right, there is somebody who is fulfilling their responsibility. And in the same way, for somebody else to have their right, you have to play a responsibility in the society.
Correct.
And, you know, it's a very, very intriguing discussion.
That was there in a recent science pass. You first do your duty and earn the rights. Now they say, I want the rights. Maybe I'll do my duty. Let us see about that.
Like, there was a very moving article sometime back. It's titled, Time to Think Differently. And the author says that even before the cyclone Hudhud struck now in Andhra Pradesh, and so many retailers, you know, anticipating shortage, they had stocked up essential commodities. And, you know, to sell them at a premium later on. And he was telling how this is such a disturbing phenomenon. And he was quoting how when a natural calamity struck Japan, he quoted a story where there were long queues outside a supermarket and stocks were running out. And after some time, only bread was left. And there was this old man standing in the queue. And when his turn came, there was only one bread left. And with tears streaming down his eyes, he took that. And he apologized, he looked back, he apologized to all the people standing behind. And he took only 3 slices from that loaf. And then he said, for my 2 little grandchildren who have not eaten since yesterday, and for my 90-year-old neighbor, please forgive me. He told, and he just took only 3 slices.
This is not all. There were water. And they went to, there was shortage of people, but excess of people in need, they told them, go to the market, take 2 bottles and put the money. There was nobody. They took only 2 bottles. They are that disciplined and they have that kind of control and concern for the others. When I went to Japan, there was one fellow. He is always running away. I said, I don't even see you in my talks. What is the matter? He used to drive the car for me to go here and there, take me from place A to place B. I was there less than 24 hours in Tokyo, but he was looking after me. Maybe little more than that. And he said, I personally have to feed 300 people every month. It's his personal quota. There is starvation, people are in need. Wow. And they are so proud they will never ask. He says, now people are asking. Previously women never used to come. Now they are coming. And they have to give me something. So they'll make a small handkerchief or something like that. He says, we never take free. We have to give something. That is culture, discipline, tradition,
yes. Yes.
Faith,
yes.
Belief. Absolutely. It's amazing.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, you mentioned, Aman, he says, you know, if inequality is perceived as just and deserved, then there would be less envy. But I was thinking, even if there is inequality, if people perceive that there is this element of compassion in society, then I think even if there is inequality and all these differences, perhaps people will be much more tolerant,
yes,
and much more order in society.
Yeah, actually it is not quite that. I would take it differently.
Okay.
We have had inequality in this country, which is very stark. I have seen what abysmal poverty is. In fact, it's unbelievable and it's difficult, yes, to think of it today. It has disappeared.
I mean, you have seen 1930s.
No, it was really this thing.
Yes.
But there are certain factors. First is that when the rich man comes to the field, he will not come with silk dhotis and all that. He will come like an ordinary fellow. He will tie his thing at the head, the turban-like thing, and then go to work, even though he is the landowner and all that. And there was no way to parade wealth, jewels. Jewels the ladies will wear on festive occasions, and they will go to their level. Some other lady there may feel jealous of the... The poor were not exposed to it. Okay, the rich man will go on a bullock cart, poor people would walk. And the number of rich people were not that many. Basically, this parading of wealth was not there to that extent.
Extravagant exhibitionism.
No, that is right. Therefore there was no chance to feel jealousy to this extent. People did not know how much money that man had. I have seen through that, lived through those periods. But today, I may be very poor, but because I access to TV, I'm,
yes,
able to see,
yes,
extravagance everywhere.
Yes.
And then see their lifestyle. So why the hell can't I have that lifestyle? It's like that owner's envy.
Yes, yes, yes.
Neighbors, owner's pride, neighbor's envy business.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you don't think about just means. We just go up and...
You want to be different. I want to make a statement. They say, I made this product so that I can make a statement. I am richer than you. You are nowhere than near me. So this is, envies have been boosted and the fire has been lit by the market.
Yes.
We didn't have that kind of thing.
And I think as you very rightly started, the solution lies in a value system. That is when, you know, there is some hope.
And the problem is, we don't accept that the value system of the past had any merits.
Correct.
It is irrelevant, and we go to the extent of saying it's irrelevant in a market society. People say, what's all this nonsense about ancient Indian value system? There's only one. It's the globalized world. Forget about everything. Basically, we have to submerge and bury tradition, culture, everything, because it's a globalized world.
Which has sustained
and whatever they exactly. I don't know how many of you are aware that when this Institute of Swami was inaugurated, Palkiwala,
yes,
he was a brilliant speaker. He explained what is the meaning of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema and Ahimsa. I have got that.
Yes.
They have got a transcript. It's amazing. He has explained, do you know what is the meaning of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema? He has explained. And as far as Dharma is concerned, he says, it cannot be defined. But let me tell you that it is because of Dharma we have been able to maintain law and order without having a strong central government.
Wow.
There was British have provided strong central government. Thousands of years before that, there were so many kings.
Yes.
But the country lived because of Dharma.
Invisible, unwritten.
It was the bond.
Bond.
So that is how,
wow,
powerful Dharma is. Today it says Dharma, that's for the birds.
So maybe that is the original invisible hand. Now it has turned into an economic
invisible hand. Hand is tainted. It's connected with market. Dharma came from there. And avatars come because we fail in maintaining Dharma.
Wow. Fantastic. I think we can go on, but we have to stop because time is running out. And we just hope we'll continue this. I think it was a very, very fruitful discussion. At least, I think for
yes,
both of us,
yes,
Aman and I,
yes,
it was an enriching discussion. And I'm sure, listeners, you got something out of it. Do write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. And we'll continue this series. So Probably the next week, sir, will have a new musing. Maybe. Otherwise, we'll continue with our Q&A sessions. But we are all the time eager to have these Q&A sessions whenever sir gives us an opportunity. And you too, please, dear listeners, send us your questions. We will have this opportunity to discuss that in this forum. Thank you so much. Over to Sunil.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, that brings to an end the sixth Q&A session based on Professor G. Venkatraman's earlier talks in this new series based on Dharma. We hope you like the session, and next week we'll be continuing the present series. And please don't forget to tune in then, and we shall alert you in advance with web and video announcements about what's coming up in the next week. So watch out this space. And we thank you for listening, and as usual, the podcast of this program may be accessed via website www.radiosci.org. Dear listeners, your questions and feedback are valuable to us. You may write to listener@radiosci.org. And coming up next on Thursday Live is the segment Service, Love in Action. Thank you and Sai Ram.
Krishna Krishna Krishna. Madhava Mohana Shyam Gopala, Madhava Mohana Shyam Gopala, Raghukula Bhushana Rajivanayana. Rambanandan Satya Sai Rama Neelakantha Sadashiva Jaya Jagadisha Jaya Parmesha Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
Sharanam Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
Sharanam Sharanam Pahi Gajananam
वासी राम है द्वारक में आए द्वारक वासी श्याम है शिरडी में आए मानस भजरे गुरु चरणम मान
मानस भजरे गुरु चरणम दुस्तर भव सागर तरणम
ऋषिकेश नारायण सुंदर नंदलाल जगदोधारा हरि विठला